in the criminal justice system of Colorado. Before I was a state representative, I was a businessman.
In 2012, Colorado Representative Pete Lee released this video where he spoke about his experience with the criminal justice system, detailing the ups, the downs, and the complete failures of the system.
During my years of working with criminal defendants, I saw some who had learned from their mistakes, paid their price to society, made changes, and went on to live productive lives. I also saw many more who didn't. They were angry at the prosecutor, the courts, the system, the victim, and me. They blamed everyone for their situation. Many refused to look in the mirror.
He doesn't paint a very productive picture, to say the least. And it's why Colorado, to the surprise of many, has taken steps to ensure kids and adults have access to a parallel but very different method. You're listening to the Andy Zanka Youth Empowerment Program, where we investigate projects and issues that are relevant to youth on the western slope of Colorado. I'm your host, Hallie Zander. Have you ever made a mistake? Taken a path that you wish you hadn't? Said or done something that you wish you could take back? Saying you're sorry and working to fix the damage is not an easy thing. It takes humility, commitment, and genuine care for the people that you have wronged. But here in Colorado, it's a path we've been exploring for the past decade. It's called restorative justice, also known as RJ. If you haven't heard of RJ before, it's essentially a space where offenders and victims can meet with safe facilitators and discuss the harm that was caused between them. Legally, it's an alternative to the traditional criminal justice system that can oftentimes be overly harsh. But philosophically, it is so much more than that. To get a sense of how it really works, I consulted some of our local experts here in the Roaring Fork Valley. What draws you to this work?
Kids.
Can you expand on that?
My whole career life has been around supporting youth. I really believe
this is Karen Barbie, who worked with Youth Zone, a nonprofit based in Glenwood Springs, but serving youth from Aspen to Parachute. It's clear they serve young people in a lot of ways, but they also provide a unique service specifically geared toward achieving restorative justice.
Being involved now in restorative justice, and it's the youth. It's really believing that they deserve an opportunity to grow from what they've done. I really, really enjoy teenage energy. They have a lot to give. I really believe that if we as adults can take a step back from being the wise ones all the time and having the answers all the time and just listen to the youth, that they give us a lot of wisdom. And that's what this whole program is about, is creating a place and a space for their voice to be strong and heard.
Last night was a summit with the hope to provide a youth-powered restorative justice program. What does Youth Zone do right now? And what services regarding restorative justice do you provide?
So Youth Zone is a nonprofit that's been in the Valley for over 40 years and supporting youth and families and communities so that people can thrive. The goal is to meet kids where they are and support them with whatever it is they need. Works with kids who need support with substance use, and not just get off the substance, but probing a little bit deeper about what's causing it in the first place. Youth Zone also works with parents and families who just need support with some skills, basically. We offer restorative justice for kids who have gotten in trouble with the law, who have made a mistake that's actually a criminal sort of offense. And rather than going through the criminal justice system, they come through the restorative justice system with that whole idea about learning from what happened, repairing the harm. And once a contract is developed with actions to repair the harm, and once all the actions have been taken, the youth has basically a clean slate. There's nothing recorded. We work through receiving referrals from the court. We receive referrals directly from police agencies. We receive referrals from schools. Sometimes families will come in and self-refer. The other thing that we've been offering is trainings. So last summer we hosted a law enforcement training. A part of the goal is to broaden the understanding among the community about what is restorative justice and break down some of the misperceptions and build up the awareness that it really is a powerful healing container.
If you can anonymously share with us a story when restorative justice really helped a kid get back on a positive path.
A part of restorative justice is it's a victim-centered arena, meaning that the victim's voice is valued. Traditionally, in a criminal justice system, the victim's voice is never heard. The court takes over. I don't want to demonize the criminal justice system. There's a place for it, and we need that. I just think that there's a lot of opportunity for learning before that becomes the essential solution. So what I'm thinking about is two youth who were in a restorative justice session. One was the offender and one was the victim. During the course of the restorative justice conference, what showed up is that the youth who had hurt the other youth was seeking attention, really just wanted kind of friendship, and sought it in a really detrimental way, a really potentially harmful way to the other youth. And during the course of the conference, the offender had the opportunity to speak and say, "This is what motivated me to do what I did." And the victim youth with the victim's parents listened. And by the end of it, the support for the offender was coming so solidly from the other youth who had been the one who received the harm and the parents of that youth, expressing, "You can come to us if you need something." It was beautiful. It was just a really beautiful thing. Instead of building up anger and dislike and "that's a bad kid over there," it built up understanding, compassion, and a willingness to reach across the harm to support.
When kids participate in RJ, they get to wipe their record clean, mend relationships, and stay out of jail. My question after hearing all of this was, why would anyone who has ever made a mistake and gotten in trouble with law enforcement decide to forego this option? But it turns out there are a lot of misconceptions and misinformation floating around about this method.
RJ, restorative justice, is seen as just another kind of punitive piece of when you do something bad, you go to RJ. That's so counter to what it really is. Restorative justice is about meeting people, and in the case of youth zone, youth who have made a mistake in a way that allows them to grow from the mistake and also to heal the harm that was done by whatever action it was that they took. And it's about healing relationships so that relationships can become stronger even than they were prior. It's about empowering community to deal with crime in a different way. One of the things that's been said is that restorative justice is where the good kids come and do the facilitating for the bad kids who make the mistakes. And that's not it. It's kids, it's youth helping youth.
Do you find that a lot of victims in these scenarios are willingly able to participate in restorative justice conferences?
Very rarely is it a flat out, "No, I'm not interested." What we offer is, you know, a lot of times the victim is, let's say, Target. A shout out for Target, because they always have somebody sitting in the circle, and that's powerful. And if they're unable to, then what they do is they write a letter of impact that is read to represent how it was impactful to them. So almost always there's a representation of the voice of the victim.
Now, it's hard for me to believe that most victims would even be willing to sit across the table from someone who hurt them. To look someone in the eye who stole from you or caused you pain and be willing to hear them out? But it's clear that victims get to be a part of the conversation however they want, whether that's through face-to-face interactions, writing a letter, or sending a proxy. And in the end, having a voice is pretty powerful.
The adage of it takes a village to raise a community meant that when a teenager made a mistake, the parents were involved and it didn't go to the criminal justice level so quickly. But things are a lot more serious in this day and age. There's less latitude for kids to make mistakes and get the support that was offered before. So to let them have a learning environment from their mistake is critical for them to become who they are. The research shows that a youth who goes through a restorative justice conference has a greater chance of getting it together and not reoffending. If a youth goes into the criminal justice system, the opposite happens. There's an increased likelihood that they'll start to identify as a bad kid and make those choices instead of identifying as I'm a really creative, funny, good friend, kind, all of these words that you can pull into the RJ session. They root into who they are, and then they make different decisions in the future.
Why is it so important for kids to be able to wipe their records clean?
We all learn by making mistakes. Teenagers are in a time where they're learning their own lives, really. And one way we learn who we are in our lives is by trying life on. And sometimes that does mean making a mistake.
There's still a lot of places where RJ could improve its practices within the criminal justice system. And it seems that Youth Zone is ready to put young people in the driver's seat, giving them a bigger role to play.
So right now, what I notice, and I want to change, is that the restorative justice process is one youth with a whole bunch of adults. It holds the same feeling of, you're the one who did something wrong and we're all here to help you. What I really want is them to have peers involved as well, so that it's really representing the strength of the youth and that they support each other.
Restorative justice has all of these benefits as an alternative to the criminal justice system. However, restorative justice is an umbrella that can cover so much more than that.
Yeah, that's a great question. So my background is in restorative justice. I'm from Chicago and I...
This is Jonathan, the assistant director at Stepping Stones in Carbondale, which provides a variety of mentorship and support services to students in the Roaring Fork Valley, including restorative justice circles. He has a much wider understanding of what restorative justice is now and what it can be.
So that's just kind of my heart and my background. And when I came here, I was actually surprised at how much restorative justice context there already was in the Valley. So Colorado has some of the most progressive laws, or even the fact that they have laws on the books about restorative justice is rare. And was able to kind of, well, just land with other people that already had a heart for that. There's quite a bit of that going on already, I think, in the community. It's a little bit different from how I was trained and raised up, which is mostly around like a peace circle approach to things, but still really awesome to see it at work valley-wide. When I talk about RJ, I think more of it as a philosophy and a foundation than I do like a practice. This is about turning power on its head and giving voice to those that often are voiceless, and returning us to ourselves and restoring us to community. So not just this idea of like, here's a manual and a binder that tells you how to do a specific activity, but more like a transformative culture shift that really allows us to know and be known by each other and be vulnerable in crisis and in pain and to make things right, you know, ultimately from every angle. At Stepping Stones, we employ a restorative justice philosophy from the ground up in how we approach everything from community, climate, and culture to accountability. And so when we think about something as simple as expectations, we don't have rules, we have expectations and values. And those are created with full voicing and participation from everyone. So when we find that an individual or a group or some sort of dynamic in a friend group is not in line with our values that we have all brought to the table, we bring it back to that and we say, how do we restore ourselves to each other and to our community?
Jonathan delves into some of the intense times that restorative justice was effective. And believe it or not, restorative justice gained popularity during periods and among places with some of the most heinous crimes against human rights. From the origins of this practice to its use now, RJ can take so many different forms.
You know, it's come from something that I think was really specific to areas that were experiencing a lot of turmoil, toxicity and upheaval. You saw a lot of it coming out of South Africa post-apartheid. You saw a lot of it coming out of Rwanda post-genocide. And there's a lot of rootedness in some of First Nations, like Native approaches to mediation as well. And so to see that kind of come into our communities, there's always room for restorative justice. When we have a young or old person who finds themselves in contrast, in discord, like with those values, we all feel that tension, like we feel that's happening, and sometimes not everyone recognizes it, but we bring it to the table and we say, okay, here's what's going on. And we use like peace circles and things like that in order to mediate these conversations. And we give the opportunity, which is a privilege and an opportunity, to choose how to restore ourselves to one another. So there's no punishment, it's not punitive. No one's called out for their failures. It's always an opportunity for growth and love to come back to what our center mm-hmm. of compassion. That might look like an individual recognizing a need for making things right and having a very broad swath of choices of how to make things right. And so I've seen everything from like someone recording a rap song video to apologize or to educate to writing letters, to choosing to do acts of service. And I think it needs to be as diverse as the situation and the individual desires it to be. And so all RJ examples are wonderful examples, even when they fail, because we learn from them.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't always go perfectly.
As I was talking to Jonathan, he mentions this specific instance where restorative justice was effective, and I was really taken aback. In my conversation with Karen, we were talking about what many would consider low-level crimes, like shoplifting and underage drug and alcohol consumption, where restorative justice was effective. But apparently, that is only the beginning of the reach that restorative justice can have.
And that's what I saw like happen anywhere from really intense scenarios where I can remember circles I've been in where you had people who had literally shot each other in the head before. Being able to embrace at the end of that. Super powerful. But also just being in a boardroom situation where people were feeling kind of nasty and hurt and unheard, and giving space for people to really be heard in with compassion and with a little bit of modality format to it, so that you're not just trying to talk through things with no framework, with no baseline understanding.
To create healthy communities that we so often strive for, restorative justice could help us to be proactive. Before our fights get so big that someone is compelled to break the law or put someone else in harm's way, we can use it as a method for early conflict resolution.
How do you believe that we as individuals in the community can incorporate restorative justice practices, the philosophy, into our day-to-day lives?
Yeah, I mean, educate yourself, read up on it. There's a lot of different approaches. There's a ton of books out there. You can see it from like a school perspective, from a legal perspective, from a community mediation perspective. You can practice these things. And as many areas and individuals and countries and tribes that practice this, there are different modes, there's different styles. I like my style because that's how I came up in it, but other people may not, and that's okay. But it always includes practice, like you said, and I don't think it's something that can be done in a bubble. Like the concept of restorative justice only exists truly in the concept of community. Even if it's a community of like a relationship of two people, that still is a community. And I guess there is some like poetic ways that RJ could be like restoring you to yourself or to your own values. But when I've seen it in practice, it's action. I mean, it is the action of sitting down in uncomfortable settings and talking and sharing until you're done. Whenever we do circles, there's no time frame. You don't schedule it. Like if it takes 4 hours, it takes 4 hours. That's fine. And we make that space sacred, you know, like that. That's another thing, is making sacred space for reconciliation, for restitution, for these conversations, because it's also a great way to approach difficult conversations. Conversations about race, equality, gender, death, you know, identity, those types of things. The restorative justice philosophy works well even in the concept of celebration, even in the concept of trying to work through a difficult idea. If you want to learn more, I guess you just...
When I asked Jonathan if there was anything else he wanted to share, he pointed to this time of discord we are living in now and how it gives us a unique opportunity to change the way we handle conflict. Whether he was referring to COVID-19 or Black Lives Matter protests, I'm not sure. This country is divided around a lot of different issues at the moment, but that also means there is a lot of opportunity for growth.
In this time of discord, I think in this time of fear and uncertainty, it is more ripe for peace and restitution than in times where everything's going well, you know, or seems to be going well. So what a great opportunity we have to work through hard things and to grow closer and to grow in our, I sound really hippie-ish right now, to grow in our love and understanding of one another. But I mean, the thing is, I will say that RJ, and I've seen it from like the Fortune 500 boardroom down to like the neighborhood street corner, and the results are always powerful. And so this is not just something for court. It's not just something for an expulsion hearing. It's not just something for a fight. Like this is a philosophy that is very compatible with a lot of faiths, with a lot of values. And yeah, it's something I think everyone needs to try. It's hard to put yourself out there, and everyone needs to be. I think that's another important part of restorative justice that I think is missing sometimes from when it's in a courtroom context, is that everyone needs to be fully present and choose to be present, I believe. And that's how I was kind of raised, like, and trained, is that you need to agree to show up. You need to really be there wanting to be there, not because if you don't, you go to jail. That's a really hard place to start in vulnerability or in restoration, but I don't know. We are community. Like, we are a Stepping Stones community. We're a Carbondale community. We are a Valley community. And we all love the opportunity to be made whole to one another and to ourselves.
While Karen and Jonathan are both adults working in restorative justice in our valley, there's a strong cohort of youth who are invested in this work as well. Finn is an eighth grader in the valley who volunteers with Youth Zone. He believes that RJ is something that his friends deserve, and that it will help him in his future career too.
Yeah, what makes it different than other types of justice scenarios?
Yeah, I'd say it's not as intimidating. And there are kids your own age there, not just like a judge and a bunch of police officers.
Why is restorative justice important to you?
I think it's important for all the kids at my school to have a chance, like not to go through all these harsh systems and stuff, but to also get punished and not just get away with it, but not have it be so hard.
Have you seen, you know, the other side of that coin where students were exposed to harsher systems?
Mm-hmm. And then they just end up there again and again.
Do you think restorative justice could play a role in your life beyond the program at Youth Zone?
Well, yeah, probably. I just think it's great. Like, I've wanted to be a police officer since I was 3, so I think that could help.
How did you know at 3 years old you wanted to be a police officer?
I always knew I wanted to help somebody and also be like involved with community. And all these kids are like, oh, I want to be in the military. And like, I have so many like family members that are in the military. So like, I still wanted to help people. I still wanted to put bad guys away, but like, I didn't want to do it overseas. I wanted to do it like more locally.
What would you say are the benefits and the disadvantages maybe of a program like restorative justice being included in the police force?
I'd say the advantages are the person that's charged gets a clean record if they, like, agree with all the terms and everything like that. They probably don't have to serve time, and that could be good for their future so they don't end up back. Some of the disadvantages, though, a lot of times in school, the problem is a lot of kids don't see it the way I see it sometimes. So they think it's just, like, juvenile detention, basically. So we're trying to kind of get that so they don't feel that way or think of it that way.
What makes it different than just juvenile detention?
Well, you try and figure it out with everyone involved. It's not just you listen to one side of the story and there isn't like a jury that like decides that thinks right away that you're guilty or something. We try and find different methods to what to do, like community service, but then also going beyond that. not just like serving a jail time or doing community service or paying a fine, but like also other methods.
What kind of other methods can be used?
Say somebody shoplifted, they hurt that person. They might have to work it off or something. Like they might have to show how hard it is to get an income for that week for a convenience store, just something like that. But I'd say everyone has to agree. It just can't be like one person.
Can you give us a scenario of when restorative justice might be more useful than traditional methods?
Possession of illegal substances, especially for youth in high schools and stuff. Or even if it's like bad, but not as bad as like hard drugs, like vaping or something. Like it's still not okay, but they wouldn't have to go through a court system.
While talking with Finn, it seemed clear that he understood how difficult it can be getting caught up with the police at a young age. I wondered how he had developed such a productive relationship with the justice system.
You seem to have a really strong sense of what's right and what's wrong. Do you think you got that from members of your family, or was it part of your community that kind of instilled that with inside you?
I guess kind of just my own opinions as well, like also like Boy Scouts, different leaderships, like Police Explorers is one, just like knowing members of the community, talking to the DA. He was like one of my male role models when I was in Cub Scouts too. He and my, his son and my brother are good friends. So
what was involved in Cub Scouts and what was your experience like there?
Just like being around a lot of good male role models for me, like not growing up with a dad and stuff like that. But more recently, this program called Police Explorers, it's through Boy Scouts, it's kind of like a junior police officer.
So Finn's tight connections with the police department and its youth programs have led to his lifelong journey to become an officer and help people. These strong relationships are the foundation of his desire to serve. So as we look ahead and see the future that restorative justice could bring to our communities, let us also ask, who is getting these opportunities? A just and fair system serves all. So as we put energy and effort towards building something new, let's ask the important questions. Who will we serve? How can we make sure it's equitable? And how can we hold those in power accountable? You've been listening to the Andy Zanka Youth Empowerment Program. I'm your host, Hallie Zander. If you'd like to listen to more of our shows or get more information, please visit azyep.org.